Have you ever experienced, Georgie, sometimes in your life where you think everything's fine, like relationships are fine and jobs fine and friends are fine and money, everything seems fine, but why am I not 100% happy? What's wrong with me that I'm not happy? On the surface, I should be deliriously happy. But usually you'll find it's one of your top values is not being met, either professionally or personally.
Jane, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast today. I'm absolutely delighted to have you on. Can you give us a really quick, well, not even really quick, a snapshot, an overview into yourself, your background, and what brought you here today? So, Jane, over to you.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Georgie. It's lovely to be invited on your podcast, Career Confidence. That's what I'm all about. And it's been my career path for the past 24 years now. So that's quite a long time. I've been around a long, long time, and I've made many career changes, and I've had a lot of transitions in my life as well. But right now, I'm the author of Navigating Career Crossroads. Basically, it's the A to Z of making a career transition, a successful career transition. I'm also the host of Your Career Podcast, where I provide lots of career advice and also interviews with fascinating professionals who've made interesting career changes, because sometimes you feel a little bit stuck in your career and you wonder, how did people do it? And so it's nice to share their stories as well. I'm on LinkedIn a great deal of my time because it works so well to market my business and also to support my clients too. So LinkedIn have named me a LinkedIn top voice for careers. I share a lot of content about careers as well. But I wasn't always so confident in my own business or my own career, because in the early days, I had absolutely no idea. And I've had quite an eclectic career journey. I've made 5 country moves, which has required a career reinvention each time. And I grew up, my childhood home is Hong Kong, and I went to university in America. I've also lived in America, in San Francisco, for a year before moving to London, and then to Singapore, to Sydney, back to Singapore, and then back to Sydney again. So multiple career changes because of the location moves, and not always because of choice. Some have been because of necessity as well. Some were by choice. And the ones that were not my choice were the hardest ones to make. But in my early days, my very first job was with Korean Airlines. I was the youngest member of the cabin crew of Korean Airlines at the age of 17. And I only took on the role because my careers master at school told us all, now that you're 17, turning 18, it's time for you to get some experience interviewing. And so we were encouraged to apply for jobs, not take them, but apply for them. And I went through the process with Korean Airlines, and I couldn't believe it. They offered me the job. So I told Mr. Foggin, my careers master, I'm off. Bye. And he goes, no, you can't. You're supposed to finish school. And I went, no. This is the chance of a lifetime. And when you're 17 to take to the skies, you think it's, you know, you're the bee's knees, right? So I flew for a year, and I realized that it wasn't actually my career path. So I did my SATs to go to university in America, and I went to America and trained as a graphic designer, technical illustrator, returned to Hong Kong and found that they didn't pay you very much as a graphic designer and a technical illustrator in Hong Kong. So I got into public relations, working agency side. And from there, I moved to America for a year where I couldn't work, couldn't get a employment pass. So, just for fun, I took flying lessons and learned how to run and ran a few half marathons, which was fun, and then moved to London because I'm half British, half Australian, dual citizenship. And so I'm able to work in London. And so I went to London and I joined United Biscuits doing their PR as a PR officer, but now client side. So I got both sides. And when I got married and I had my first child, and I thought, oh, now I need a little bit of flexibility. And so I trained to become a fitness instructor. And that started actually a really good career journey as a fitness instructor, aerobics instructor. It was during the boom days in the mid-80s. I've been around a long time, Georgie. And so it was just the heyday for aerobics. So I became an aerobics instructor. I became a personal trainer. I trained through the Dance Education Association of America and through Moves Fitness, which was very much like Jazzercise back in the day. And I ended up getting a silver medal in the Nike National Aerobic Championship and got a Nike sponsorship for several years in Singapore to promote total body conditioning throughout Singapore, which was, again, great fun and gave me a lot of flexibility while my children, I had two children by then, while they were growing up. And then sometimes life just presents you with opportunities. And through a connection that I had and some of the amateur drama that I was doing together with my children, I was given an opportunity to get back into corporate training. I did a lot of training when I was working for United Biscuits in the PR department and induction courses, and I really enjoyed the training. But then someone said to me, Jane, can you come along and just talk to my manager, who's head of organizational development at Credit Suisse First Boston, because we need someone to train them on confidence building. And I thought, well, there's an opportunity that's presented to me. Why don't I go along and have a chat and find out what it's all about? And that ended up being 3 years of delivering Yes, I Can, a confidence building workshop that they asked me to create. And from there, I thought, you know, I really enjoy training. I enjoy personal training on the fitness side and aerobics, but the corporate side, it was something that was even more fulfilling to me. So I got back into training. Another opportunity presented itself when someone said, Jane, I think you'd be a good coach. I said, what do you mean? Well, I know someone who needs a career coach in this global outplacement business, and they're taking on additional coaches. Why don't you go and have a look? Now, by that time, as you can see, I've had quite a number of changes and children in between. And by then I was 40. And when I interviewed at the age of 40 for this career coach, career transition coach role, as I was going through the interview process, I thought, oh my goodness, this feels like the thing that I've been really looking for all of my life. And I clicked with my manager immediately during the interview process and ended up being conversation more about values and what really drove us in our lives. And I landed that role. And from there, that was nearly 25 years ago now. And so I joined the Global Outplacement Organization, and over the years I gained additional qualifications and certifications in coaching, and now I run my own coaching practice. So there's a long story for you, Georgie.
Well, thank you for sharing. I've actually got so many questions for you, because that's just an amazing story. So you've got, and also it illustrates and proves something I speak about a lot on this podcast, is that people often think that career should be linear. Like, this is step one, step two, step three, step four to get to where they want to be. And often it's so not. And I love the way that you just kept on upskilling. It just seems to me like you went from being an air hostess to then running marathons, trying to learn how to fly planes, being a personal trainer, graphic designer. Like, you've done it all, coach. Like, it's so fascinating to me. And I think that sometimes people, I think they wait. They go, right, one day I'll have it all figured out and I know what I want to do. But what was really interesting, and I think that your story sort of makes sense to me here, is that when you were sort of a personal trainer, you learned to probably perform, you learned to talk to people, you learned to coach, because part of being a personal trainer is also coaching. So that was an element that you learned through personal training. And then I imagine you learned how to market yourself through being like a graphic designer and PR and learning all of that. So it almost made sense that you're sort of accumulating all these skills to then, when the opportunity really presented itself, you were ready for it. Is that kind of like a pattern you see when you're coaching your students, you know, your career professionals, whatever you want to sort of call them? But what do you see holds people back from like making the decisions and taking these steps to get to the outcome that they may or may not know they even want?
I think the biggest thing that holds people back is that they fear the unknown and they fear change, because, I mean, change is constant. So we may as well embrace it because it's inevitable. That's the only thing in our lives that we can guarantee, no matter how good or how bad something is, it is going to change. It's not ever going to stay the same. And so when an opportunity presents itself, sometimes people think, oh, not now, not yet, oh, not me, or I don't think I can do it. But I because of my own personal experiences as well, that if you are able to express yourself well and people get to know you, they get to like you, they trust that you can deliver as well, then you tend to find that opportunities do present themselves. And for me, I've been lucky, but also I work very, very hard. And so in each career that I've had, I've tried to be the best that I could be, not the best in the industry, because, you know, that's a really hard ask, but just my own personal best, whether it's running or whether it's designing or whether it's creating a PR campaign or in anything. I just want to do the best that I can. And I've noticed that people do recognize that, because when someone says, oh, Jane, you did that well, I don't ever say, oh, it was nothing. I'll go, thank you so much. I worked so hard on that. And I'm really glad that you actually noticed. So go me. So sometimes you have to back yourself as well. But it hasn't always been a smooth path, because I've been quite confused a number of times. And some of the changes I've made have been very, very difficult. One of the changes I made was actually in my early 40s. And that was when I went through a divorce, and I was living in Singapore at the time, and I had teenage children. I have two beautiful daughters who are wonderful career women now themselves. But so I was going through this divorce. I knew I couldn't stay in Singapore because of the employment pass situation. And I managed to get a self-employment pass for 1 year, but it would only renew year on year. And I felt so insecure, thinking any year I could be, you know, asked to leave the country or not have the pass renewed. So I thought it would be better to move to Australia. So I uprooted my daughters, my mother, who was living with me at the time, and my mum. I'm from Hong Kong originally. My mum didn't speak English. She did not want to move to Australia, but we moved together with my cat as well, who was not happy either, because there's quarantine for a month when you bring animals in. And I had to reinvent my career completely. At that time, I'd already started coaching. And so I knew I wanted to continue with that. But in Australia, I had no network. I didn't know anyone. And I wasn't sure how I was going to do it. Plus, of course, you had all the emotional turmoil of personal changes, as well as another country change. But I managed to decide who my target was, who I needed to speak to, find people who would refer me to others to speak to them as well, just to keep expanding that network. And I was able to reinvent myself as a career coach in Australia. And it really was rewarding, knowing that I was able to do it through sheer hard work and determination. And there were times when I wanted to curl up in a ball and think, oh, I wish everyone would just go away and someone fix it for me. But I knew that I couldn't do it on my own. So having a total career reinvention in my early 40s was, it was a big challenge. But I knew that if I didn't do it, who else was going to do it? I had to do it for my family as well. And so it made a really big impact on me and the way that I view things in the world. And I think it made me a stronger person as well, because now when my clients are going through change, and for them, there are multiple stresses. There's never just one thing like I'm changing jobs and, or there's been a redundancy. Very often there's the personal side as well. And I had one gentleman who came to me, and when I was talking to him, he shared that not only was there a redundancy, but his wife had recently passed away. He had two children and his parents were aging and needed care. And so that poor man had so many stresses, one on top of the other. And through my own life experiences and transitions, we could really empathize with each other. And I was able to help to coach him through. So life experiences really give you those transferable skills to be able to use in your job, especially as a coach as well.
There's so much power in that story. And I actually I love diving into people's mindset. I think that this is honestly the foundation upon everything else is built upon. One thing I can hear in your story is you have a lot of adaptability and resilience. So I'd really love to understand maybe where that came from. If you could pinpoint if that's been created or if you've always had that and what you think is how we can all build it. But I just also want to just take a breath and hold space for that amazing transition, Jane. Like, that is huge. And I think that sometimes, unfortunately, we have to sort of wait for crisis for us to be pushed into doing something that maybe we wouldn't have ever done had that not have happened. And I think when you're in it, when you're in what I like to call the messy middle, everything can feel so intense and nothing feels like it's going right. But that's when I remind myself, this is where the growth is. This is where, when I'm over the bridge and I'm over the messy middle, I'll look back and go, with that hadn't have happened, I wouldn't be who I am today with all this new skills and wisdom and knowledge to then apply to the working world, to my coaching clients, whatever that may be. And I think that there's so many people, especially right now with the rise of technology, that are going to find themselves in a very, very scary place. Unknown, unsure, stuck, being made redundant, losing their jobs. Like, we're not about to go for a period of life where things are going to get any easier. I'm constantly posting on LinkedIn. You need to upskill. You need to be ready. No one's coming to save you. You have to be in the driving seat of your own career. So talking about those skills of adaptability and resilience, have you always had them? Because your story is just incredible and I want to hold space for it, because to go through divorce, to have children, to have your mother that speaks no English, to move from Singapore to Australia and start a business, that's massive. So talk to me, have you always had it or have you built it over time?
I think it must be because of my early childhood experiences. And My father was from England, and he was a Cambridge scholar, so he was very academic, and he worked at the Hong Kong University. He was a deputy registrar at the Hong Kong University. My mother was just the most beautiful Chinese woman who didn't speak any English, and my father learned how to read, write, and speak Chinese because of his work when he first moved from the UK to Malaysia. He was enamored by Asia after the Second World War, and he always wanted to go back. So he got a job with the Malayan Civil Service, and he got sent to Macau to learn Cantonese with a cohort of other civil servants who needed to learn local dialects that would be spoken in Malaysia. So that's how he met my mum. And my mum was buddied up with him because she didn't speak English and he had to speak Cantonese. So he learned how to speak Cantonese very, very well. So they fell in love and got married. And so that was a very happy story. But as I was growing up, we all spoke Cantonese at home. Dad was the English scholar working at the university. And so Dad was my guiding light. Mum was wonderful and loving and caring. But I would learn things from Dad. And unfortunately, at the age of 49, when I was 11 years old, he passed away of a heart attack. And then life was absolute turmoil, complete turmoil. My brother was 17 at the time. He was about to go off to uni in the UK. He failed all his exams the first year and had to retake them because of the emotional experiences that we were going through. But at that time, I was 11 years old and Mum was absolutely lost. And I could speak English and I could speak Chinese and I could write English. And so what happened was we had to move out of the university compound and into an apartment in Hong Kong. But when my brother went off to the UK for university, I had to look after Mum, basically, because we had bills to pay, checks to write. Mum couldn't write English, so I was writing all the checks and doing the accounts. So I was only, 11, 12 years old at the time. And money was quite tight. So I took on tutoring when I got into high school, and I was very good at languages. At the time, can't remember any of my French now, but at the time, I was doing very well in French. So I was tutoring French and I was tutoring English language and literature, just for some extra money. And I found that, hey, I can earn a little bit of extra money and help out, and I can help Mum, and she's not on her own and she doesn't need to worry. But basically, Mum as I said, was a wonderful woman, but she didn't need looking after. And so I did. And I found that I grew up very fast. And I knew that I had to study and do well. And luckily, I'm a pretty good study. So I'll work hard and I'm not naturally brilliant. I just work hard at it to make sure that I can get good grades. But when that opportunity at 17 to actually get this job with Korean Airlines came up, and as I said, my careers master was like, no, Jane, you're not supposed to. I'm like, I'm going to earn really good money now, or what seemed like good money at the time. And so I went into my first step of my career because I didn't know any better. I didn't have a plan. And even though there was a careers master, he didn't know me and what would be right for me. So I think that's where the resilience comes from, Georgie. It's just things happen and you just have to get on with it. And you could say, woe is me, and, you know, crumble in a heap. But I don't think that's a very good way of doing it. It's like, okay, here are my options. What do I do? And sometimes you end up on autopilot. I honestly believe I was on autopilot from the age of 11 when Dad died until I was 16, because I never cried. I remember I never cried, even when I was told. But when I turned 16, suddenly I started a bit of introspection and thinking, oh my, what's happened to me the past 5 years? And that's when all the emotion came out. And I remember there was one evening when I just was so upset that I had to leave the house. And I went all the way to Repulse Bay Beach and sat on the beach and just sat there all night until the sun came up. Just thinking and thinking and wishing that I'd cried earlier. And, you know, it's, you can't bottle up your emotions. If you feel upset about something, yes, you can get on with stuff, but you've got to also acknowledge what you're going through, because otherwise you could end up with lots of mental health issues. And after that, I found it was really quite cathartic. The sun came up and I thought, okay, I'm done now. I can now get on and continue to do what needs to be done. And so, I guess, thanks for that question, actually. It's making me think a little bit, Georgie, because I guess that's where the resilience came from, because I knew that, you know, if I didn't do something, who would?
It's such a powerful story. And I'm just trying to identify why some people go on to have very successful careers and why other people struggle. And I think in this new world, these skills are going to be very, very needed. And not that I worry for the younger generations, but I think that, you know, tough times create strong people and good times create weak people. And I think when you've gone through adversity and challenge in your life, it does sort of, well, especially if you have got the right skills, toughen you up a bit, I guess. And you are more adaptable and you can deal with these situations better. But I also agree with what you said. I think the older we get, the more wise we get. We learn to emotionally regulate, but also acknowledge that we're feeling frustrated, we're feeling sad, and it's not shying away from those feelings because they will catch up with us later. And I think that there's going to be a lot of change, like we keep on saying. And going back to that gentleman that you were speaking about, because there's going to be people listening to this podcast right now that might have just lost their job or might be going through something really tough, and maybe they are concerned about their career and what that means. It's like, how do you, I guess, guide and coach your clients to navigate these really tricky times? What are some sort of like tools or steps that you give to those people who are struggling and are going to need to get themselves back into the job market, feeling a bit deflated and feeling a little bit flat?
Well, first of all, if there are mental health issues, if it seriously is affecting you and you're going through a transition, then obviously I'm a career coach. Mm-hmm. I'm not a psychologist. So with duty of care, I'd need to refer them to the relevant professionals to be able to help with that. And for most organizations, they provide you with EAP should you be going through a difficult time. But when it comes to the actual career side of things, well, that's where I come into my own, because I know that it is an emotional roller coaster. And there are days when you think, no, I can do this. And then there are days when you think, oh, I just wish someone else would fix it for me. And or else I just want to run away. And that's quite normal. And I think the important thing is that if you're going through a transition, you need to really acknowledge that it's okay not to feel okay all the time. And once you do that, then what I do is I take people right back to foundations, because the important thing is to know who you are, what you want, what you can do, and what you aspire to. And you need to have that career clarity. And what I usually do is I work on people with people to identify what their true career anchor is, because we all have one anchor that pulls us in a certain direction. And if I'd known what my anchor was back in the day, I would have made some different career choices. And once I discovered my true career anchor, which is dedication to a cause or service, it all made sense. I thought, no wonder I've made the choices that I do, because I'm always in service of others, whether it's serving, 30,000 feet in the air on an aircraft, or if I'm personal training and helping people to improve their fitness. Again, that's service. If I'm training, that's service. When I'm coaching, it's 100% service as well. So I'm now in a career where I'm doing exactly what is right for me. So for others, your career anchor could be general managerial anchor, technical functional, challenge, entrepreneurial, a range of anchors. But once you know what that is, then you can ask yourself, is the decision I'm about to make going to enable me to fulfill my anchor, or will it take me away from fulfilling that anchor? And combined with that, you need to know what your values are, your skills and knowledge, what motivates you and demotivates you, what satisfies you in a working environment, and not just the job function, but the people that you work with, the location, the different aspects of the role, the industry itself, whether it's meaningful to you or not. So once you understand what's important to you and what's not important to you, what your skills are, what might be transferable or not, then you can start to put a plan together to formulate your job search strategy. But you have to start with that career clarity before you get the career confidence to follow the path that probably is the right one for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I'm thinking about someone listening to this right now, and they're like, this is all amazing, Jane, but I don't have a clue. You know how some people, I don't know why, like when I speak to them, and you'll probably find this as well, Jane, when I ask people what they want, they instantly can tell me what they don't want. Well, I don't like this, I don't like this, I don't want this. And it's like, that's great, but what do you actually want? I don't know many people in life that can actually say their 10-second elevator pitch of exactly what they want their life to look. And I think this is really, really important. I think this is the biggest life hack you can ever have. So if someone's really stuck right now and they're like, I don't know what my career anchor is, I don't, what's a value? Where should they begin?
Okay. Well, I have a number of assessments I can give them, which guides them through. What's interesting is that over the years, I've become qualified and I've used numerous assessments from MBTI to LSI and Hogan assessment systems. And having coached now for just about 24 years, probably more now, I've distilled everything that I've learned into a number of very simple PDF exercises, which I use with my clients when we start coaching. And they go, wow, these are so simple, but they're not easy, Jane. I said, no, they're not easy, because you need to think a little bit and consider and reflect. And you might not have all the answers now, but once you start considering what is important to you, then it makes it easier. And for instance, if we're going to go through a values assessment, and a lot of people, they look at their values, and you can read lots of books that talk about, assessing your values, and you can read What Color Is Your Parachute, and there are numerous career transition books that are very, very helpful. But when you look at your values and you decide, okay, these are my top five values, I like to take people through an exercise that if you had to compromise a value, which one would it be? And then they have to really think seriously. And very often I'll get them to use a post-it note, or several post-it notes, and they'll lay out all their values in order of importance. And I'll go, oh, okay, well, if you had to compromise this one or that one, which would it be? And by the end of the hard questioning, you'll find that most of the post-it notes have all been moved around, and they've found the top five true not negotiable values. And, you know, have you ever experienced, Georgie, sometimes in your life where you think everything's fine, like relationships are fine and jobs fine and friends are fine and money, everything seems fine, but why am I not 100% happy? What's wrong with me that I'm not happy? On the surface, I should be deliriously happy. But usually you'll find it's one of your top values is not being met, either professionally or personally. And because it's a top value, if it's not met, of course, there's going to be that discontent. And it's really interesting when you pinpoint which value is being compromised, because that's when you think, oh, yeah, this person said that or that happened. And I thought, oh, never mind. And I brushed it under the carpet. But as soon as you address it and you talk about it, you'll find that you'll feel a lot more empowered to think, no, next time I'm going to say, no, I'm not going to allow that to happen. And that helps. Once this is why the clarity helps with the confidence, because once you know what's important to you, then you can start to explore what might be the right environment or the right relationship as well, if you're going to talk personally as well as careers, what might be the right thing for you.
Do you know one thing I've always struggled with? And I think values is something that I got really clear on many, many years ago. And I can relate to exactly what you just said there, Jane, where on the outside, I looked like I was crushing it. I was in a corporate role. I was earning fantastic money. I was in recruitment. I was the top salesperson. But inside, I was anxious, overwhelmed, burnt out, exhausted, wasn't sleeping, wasn't prioritizing my health. And health has now become my number one value because I know what it's like when it's not. So it was interesting when you said that. I thought, yeah, I know exactly what that feels like. But the thing that I still find myself conflicting with, and we could turn this into a coaching session, so feel free to roll with me on this, because I know, because, and the reason I'm saying this as well, because I was at a gathering the other day with a number of friends, and my friend and I were having the same conversation, and then other women jumped in. It's like, yeah, I feel like that. I feel like that's okay. Okay, there's a pattern here. I sometimes feel like I've got two sides of me. One side is Georgie, who's very ambitious, who wants to have this podcast, you know, sort of like the number one, who wants to grow a massive recruitment agency, who wants to, you know, write a global best-selling book and all these things I'm like really passionate about and really, you know, driven to. Then I have this other side of me, this free spirit, this Georgie that wants to walk on the beach, meditate, be in nature, dive in the ocean every day. And sometimes they go to battle with each other because I feel this desire to go after my dreams, or maybe what I think of my dreams. That's a whole other topic in itself, I guess. But these ambitions that I have for my career, my business. But then I also have this free spirit who wants to ground herself in nature and be, you know, just a bit more of a, you know, float around a bit more. But the two sometimes collide, because sometimes when I look at my calendar, I go, well, where's the time for that, Georgie? And she sort of sometimes gets pushed to the side, and then I get exhausted and frustrated again. Have you seen that a lot in your coaching sessions? Like, is that common? Or yeah, I'd love to get your opinion on that.
It's very common with the women that I coach, and I coach 50-50 mm-hmm. men and women. And I think it's because as women, we want to prove ourselves so much. And sometimes it can be a little bit of a battle, and we want to be able to make our mark and, you know, like plant that flag in the sand to say, this is what I stand for. This is who I am. This is what I can achieve. And I believe that there is a time and a place for everything. And, you know, all of these things that you want to do, you know, like write a best-selling novel and have your podcast, which I'm on. So thank you. It's such a honor to be on your podcast. It's lovely. And if it's the right time for you now, then now is the time, before all of the other things in life start to take over, to get it done. For me, I did things the other way around. I had children quite early. I was 26 when I had my first daughter, 28 when I had my second daughter. And my career kind of fit around the children. But my number one value is health, because I've had a number of health issues and I'm now at the age where I have to be even more careful with my health. And And because I've had some major health issues in the past, I've realized that if I'm not healthy, I can't look after anybody else. So your health is most important. If you're oscillating between, I want to do all of this, but I'm getting so burnt out, and that's why I want to go and have you know, a barefoot walk along the beach. Sort of ask yourself, why am I being pulled in this direction and yet pulled in that direction? Is now the right time for one thing or the other? And it doesn't mean that you can't have it all. It just means maybe not yet. And if you've got that plan and you know that once I reach this, then I'll feel like, okay, I can start to take a little bit of a break. But I mean, even when you're working really hard at anything, you have to take regular breaks regardless. So just budget that into your diary every day for, you know, a bit of meditation or breathing or look after yourself. That's important. But if now is the time for you to hit it and get that book written and, you know, do all of these things before you focus more on the personal side, then get it done. Because if you don't, you're always going to regret it. Mm. And I always think we need to live with no regrets. Ultimately, you know, one of the things that's part of this career clarity pack that I work on with my clients is that the ultimate aim, what is your mission? What's the legacy that you would like to leave? What do you want to be known for? So like Georgie Hubbard, who are you? You want to be the best-selling author, top podcast host, amazing recruitment consultant that's a global agency. And, oh, I didn't mention I was in recruitment for a year. Oh. And I have to say it was, because it was heavily sales focused, mm-hmm. that's not me. Mm-hmm. And that was what got me very, very burnt out because yeah. it was very competitive, mm-hmm. KPI driven. Mm-hmm. And I'm a career coach. I'm just a warm and fuzzy career coach. Collaboration is what I do. Mm-hmm. Competition is not something that I hanker after. So I get it that, you know, it is very, very competitive. But so you think about, okay, if this is what I want to achieve, what else do I want to be known for? So do you want to be known as, you know, a wonderful friend, a great daughter, a, you know, a loving wife? How important is that for you as well? So when you know what the ultimate aim is, then you can reverse engineer. So hopefully, you know, there's time for family and friends and enjoyment and love and all of those important things for us. But also there needs to be achievement too. Mm. But at the end of the day, when you look back on your life, what do you want to be remembered for, Georgie?
Mm. A powerful question that I will definitely sit with. I think that I feel a sense of urgency right now, which is why I do this podcast every week and why I'm writing a book right now, is because I can see the way the world is going and I can see the change that's coming and I can see all the jobs that are going to be obsolete and everyone's going to need to upskill and reskill and rethink their careers. And Jane, you're going to be absolutely booked out because people are going to need to career pivot. They're going to need to take their skills and work out what's transferable and put them into another industry. And that industry is going to be having to, something to do with AI, machine learning and robotics. And that's going to be part of the new future of work. There'll still be other jobs that will not go obsolete due to AI, but every single person's going to have to rethink the way they work. And I do feel the sense of urgency because, you know, I grew up in a very traditional family where mum didn't work, well, she worked part-time, dad worked. And, you know, I'm worried that as women, if we don't sort of really start taking our careers and our finances seriously, we could get left behind. And I just don't want to see that happen because I've seen what happens when women do stay stuck. They don't have the financial means. They are in marriages that they're being controlled. And I don't want that to happen. So that's a real driving force for me right now of like, so my legacy is to help as many women as I possibly can transition into well-paying jobs, jobs of the future, so they can keep their financial freedom and independence, because that's something that I'm incredibly passionate about as a female and as a female founder as well. So that's probably where my legacy comes in. And then I guess, you know, I'm now 37. I don't have children. I'm still debating whether or not that's going to be in my future. But then as a woman, you know, you sort of think, well, that's the ticking clock. So then that sort of starts to play in your mind and you go, well, if you want this, which I'm still not sure I do, Jane, if I'm honest, I don't know if I have got those naturally nurturing skills when it comes to having kids. Maybe that will change. But then that sort of plays on your mind as well. And I know there's so many women that think the way I think, because I speak to them, you know, like their career, they're ambitious women. They don't want to live with regrets, but they're in their late 30s and they're like, God, like, this is so unfair. Why do I have to now put this on hold? And you don't have to put it on hold, but you certainly can't do it all well. And I think I've seen people try to do everything, and they put themselves at the bottom of the barrel. Their health really suffers, and they don't end up in good places. So I think it's just something as women, we all have to support each other on and ask for help and ask for guidance and not be ashamed of having these conversations and saying this out loud, because it's something that I know a lot of women my age are thinking about if they don't have children yet. So it's an interesting conversation, but that's ultimately what I'm passionate about helping women get into a position where they're financially secure so they have choice. I think choice is power in today's world.
Yeah. I think, you know, what I really wish is that in secondary school, in high school, they taught financial literacy.
Oh, 100%.
If only they did that, because it's taken me a long time, because there was none of that it was such a long time when I was in secondary school, but there was none of that. We did accounting, but then that was it. And it was just tediously boring. It's one of the things that I outsource in my own business, because I can do it, but I don't enjoy it. Some people thrive on it, but financial literacy is a skill that every child should have instilled in them. And, you know, The Barefoot Investor, you've probably read that book, written by Scott Paik, is excellent. And he's got one that's for families to teach children from a young age how to be financially responsible as well, and delay gratification, you know, save for this, then you'll have that later, which I think is a very important thing. But for women, that biological clock, my daughters are in their late 30s now themselves, and there's always this, my career, it's the family. Should I have children? Should I wait? Should I have one more child or should I not? And it makes it so difficult, because especially with couples now, if you want to own your own home as well, then you probably need the dual income, and you need the dual income in order to be able to afford your mortgage, because the housing crisis, I mean, everything is very expensive, especially if you want to live in the big cities here in Australia. And so it's almost like I want a family, but then, you know, I still need to work because I need to pay the mortgage. And there's so much to juggle. And I'm really glad that more and more women are voicing their concerns and are also supporting each other, because it's important to know that you're not alone when you're going through that process. Mm. And I know that when I was going through my divorce, because I was changing country and I didn't know a lot of people here at the time, it's really hard when you don't have someone to talk to who's done it, who's going through something similar to you, just so that you feel that you're not the only one. Mm. And I always encourage when I have a program called the Career Success Program, which is a membership program. And whenever we have our regular live Zoom coaching calls, because that's part of a component of the program, I always encourage everybody to connect with each other on LinkedIn, support each other, talk to each other in between coaching calls as well, because sometimes it's just that little bit of Dutch courage you get when you know that, oh, someone else is struggling with the same thing that I'm feeling as well. Mm-hmm. And I think the community that you're building, Georgie, is very valuable, especially because you're working now with mid-career women, yes? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I work with mid-career men and women, but very many of them are slightly more mature and they're worried about ageism in the workplace now. And because I'm in my mid-60s, I'm thinking, oh, ageism. It's a problem if you think that it's a problem, because there's always a way to reinvent so that you can still stay relevant. But 100% with AI and the changes, the number of people who are going through redundancies now because their jobs have been made redundant because of the technological changes, if we don't stay up to speed with what is changing, or at least be aware and understand why this is what businesses are adopting, we'll feel resentful, because it'll be like we're ostriches putting our heads in the sand. It's changing. You may as well embrace it. AI, I think, is a great tool for productivity, but don't use it as a crutch. Some people are now really using it as a crutch. I see too many AI-generated posts on LinkedIn. I mean, you can tell when someone hasn't written something themselves. I think it's a bit sad, because I like individual creativity as well. But do use it as a tool. It'll save you a lot of time, but make sure the creativity is still your own. Mm-hmm. And in fact, one of the, you know how there's a saying, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Well, I'm always learning something new. Every year I try and get a new certification or learn something new. I've created my own GPT. So I've got Jane Career Coach GPT, and it's based on my book, Navigating Career Crossroads. And because I spent a year back in 2014 writing Navigating Career Crossroads, it's in its third edition now. There's so much content in there that was basically a brain dump of everything I'd coached people on for many years, and getting the clarity and the job search strategies and negotiation, etc. The GPT taps into the knowledge that's in my book. And I thought, well, that's very nice, because people who, first of all, my mission is to make careers guidance accessible and affordable to everybody who needs it. That's what really drives me, why I wrote the book in the first place. And now with this GPT, that knowledge is there. People can just ask. And it brings me joy to know that someone is able to get assistance, you know, so easily. They can either read the book or else they can tap into the GPT, and it's so easy. But then if they need that one-on-one support, you know, and that emotional support and accountability to get to where they want to be, then there's the option of the one-on-one coaching or the career success program too. So it's like lots of different options, and I'm able to have these options because of technology. So technology is not something to be feared. Learn how to use it properly, and it will benefit you and your career as well.
Perfectly said, Jane. And I love it. And just a side note as well. When you said, did you say you're 65?
Yes.
Oh my God. If people are watching this on video, Jane looks about 40. Seriously.
I need to look this little bit here.
No, you look fabulous.
You must have a fossil to run your camera.
Oh, you look amazing. 65 years young. That's amazing. But look, you've touched upon something amazing as well, which is the career transitions. And this is just sort of what I really want to sort of like drive home and leave people with, because there are going to be a lot of people, career professionals, that are going to have to career pivot, change careers, right? So do you have any frameworks or any advice when we sort of look at our transferable skills? Is there a sort of a framework you use to help people identify them and then think, how can I apply this into a tech role or a new opportunity that could open up?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. In my Career Clarity Pack, this is one of the processes I take people through. You can do it on your own and get the pack on your own, or else through coaching, I guide them through it. But the number one thing is, first of all, identify your career anchor, because there is a pull. What I want is not for you to feel like you need to make a change because it's a push out of where you are and you're running away from something because you don't like it. It needs to be a pull towards a certain direction because it feels right for you. And knowing what your anchor is really makes that difference. Then assess, where are you at in your life right now? Now, you talked about all the different things that you want for yourself in your life, and you're being pulled in this way and that way. Well, do a life inventory. This is part of what I do, is what's going on in your relationships, with your physical and mental health, with your finances, with your career, and also your physical environment. What is a tick okay? What is something that you might be tolerating about one of those five aspects in your life? So if you take an inventory, then you can see where you're at in your life right now. What's working, what's not working. And I'm still a work in progress. You know, I go through the life inventory with my clients, and I'll go, oh, don't worry if you don't get, you know, 100% on everything, because we all have something else that we might be tolerating that, once you're made aware of it, then you can take action to do something about it. Then after that, we go into the career side. What are the values that drive you in your career? What are the satisfiers that are important to you with regard to the people you work with, the type of boss, the type of work environment, the industry, the company? What is satisfying and what is dissatisfying in each of the roles that you've had in your career so far, there will be a common thread. And when we find the common thread that's motivating, that starts to give you that little bit of insight into, oh, this could work for me if I can replicate it elsewhere. And then, of course, what have you done that actually has made a positive difference at work? So I'm talking about your tangible accomplishments now. Did you save time, save money, streamline processes, mitigate risk, invent something new, recommend something, influence something? If there's anything that you've done that has had a positive outcome, jot those down as well, because then you'll know what it is that feels satisfying and is a benefit, and you can leverage that into the next role. I like to break down each accomplishment to identify what the transferable skills would be, and they're the human skills. You know, it's the communication, the negotiation, the influence, your sense of humor, things like that that make you a little bit different from everybody else. Because looking for that unique selling proposition is such a challenge for most of us. We don't know, you know, hey, I just did my job. I don't know what makes me special. And more often than not, what makes you special will probably be your attitude and the way that you approach things. So that's the process that I take people through. And once they've assessed all of that, and they also have identified where they want to ultimately be and be known for and remembered for at the end of their days, then they can start to plot the path forward. And sometimes it's never linear. That's one of the myths about careers. In the past, you know, a job for like, in Japan, it was the salaryman mentality. You know, you join a company and then you get promoted and promoted. The longer you work, you get more money, and then you retire. And then you drink lots of soju or something, okay, or sake rather. But that's no longer a thing. You know, there is no job for life, and most of us will have a portfolio career where we may make a bit of a change and a bit of a pivot. I'll tell you, when COVID hit and so many people were stood down, I was never busier than during those COVID years. Because so many people working from home, or else they had been stood down or furloughed, and they were thinking, what am I doing? Why was I working there? I didn't even like it in the first place. It wasn't for me. And that's why I was so busy, because everyone was exploring and thinking about making that pivot, but they didn't know how. But the key is to find out what are the skills that you've got that really can be transferable into a different industry. Mm-hmm. So plan it step by step to get to the next stage.
I really love how you've just broken that down. That's really powerful. And I think that it's really understanding, again, what have you achieved in your current role? What do also people say about you? Like, how would someone describe you? I think that's really key as well. And we're so quick, I think, to maybe judge ourselves too harshly. And actually, there's so many skills that we have. Like, we might be somebody that, like, maybe I was thinking about someone as you were speaking then about, and she didn't even realize she did it, but she was always somebody that was so thoughtful. And anytime that there was like someone's birthday in the office, she was the one that went out and organized all of the cake and where we were going to go out for some drinks that evening. And it was just such a natural skill that she had. And anyway, I think she's gone on to like event planning or something. She got out of recruitment and she went and did something like that was like really in her wheelhouse. And she just loves it because she's really good at being organized, and she loves helping other people and bringing joy to others. And that was definitely a transferable skill. She never worked in event planning in her life, but she naturally had this ability just to sort of like want to make people feel special, was super organized. And that's not me. I forget people's birthdays all the time. I'm like, oh God, it's my mom's birthday today. Hi, mom, happy birthday. So it's like, that wouldn't be for me. But, you know, I think that, yeah, it's identifying what do you do naturally as well? You know, like, and I think that it's so many people, I think, focus too much on the hard skills. Oh, I don't have a software engineering degree. I can't get into tech. It's like, that is just such a small part. And in recruitment, I keep getting asked for, Jane, more critical, I'm going to call them, skills than hard skills. You know, businesses know they're going to have to upskill people. Businesses know they're not going to get the perfect resume coming through. They know they're going to have to offer people the opportunity to upskill, which is why they need people who are adaptable, why they need people who are resilient, why they need people who are growth-minded and open to learning and curious. These are also the skills of the future, not just machine learning, algorithms, robotics, AI. Yes, that's the hard skills, and I highly recommend people go and have a play around with the tools that are out there. But we need to focus more on all of our human skills, and these are the skills that most companies in the future are really going to be focused on when they're interviewing somebody. And I keep on telling people who listen to the podcast and all of the amazing people I speak to daily in recruitment, don't neglect these skills because they're absolutely critical in the future of work. So thank you for breaking that down, because we all have transferable skills that are needed in the future of work. But Jane, final question. I think we've covered a lot of ground today, and I'm going to have you back on, by the way, because I do feel like there's so much more I can speak to you about. And like I said, as the world speeds up and more people are going to have to career pivot, we'll maybe just do a whole episode on that in itself. But is there anything we haven't spoken about today that you think is really important that, you know, mid-level career professionals know, think about, ponder over before we close out today's episode?
I think self-belief is very, very important, because when you doubt yourself, you're going to hesitate. And when you hesitate, you will feel uncertain and unsure of yourself. And you'll start to get that little monkey brain going, no, you can't, no, you can't. Or when that little fellow sits on your shoulder, you know, the self-limiting belief, saying, oh, you're not going to be able to do it, you're going to fail, all of those terrible little voices in our head. So the important thing is, and I always tell this to my client, is self-limiting belief. Most people have got the self-limiting belief sitting on their shoulder, and they allow that belief to keep talking to them. You've got to knock it off your shoulder and say, go away, I'm going to give it a go. Because inertia is just, it breeds more inertia, doesn't it? The only thing that's going to move you forward is action. So think about, what is the one little thing that you can do that's going to be positive today? Is it to write down a positive affirmation? Or is it to write down the good thing that you did at work today? Or did someone compliment you? Or whatever it is, write at the end of each day, write down the one thing that you're the most proud of. Keep a record of it. And at the end of the week, write down all the accomplishments that you've achieved. Because if you keep a little brag book as such, then when you need it, you can use it to put into your resume. Too many people still have a responsibility-based resume rather than an accomplishment-based resume. And just working on your resume, it's a huge confidence booster if you identify the problems you encountered, what you did, what actions you took in order to overcome those problems, and what was the result. Once you know that, you can create a bullet point for your resume, and it gives you talking points when they ask you behavioral questions. It a little bit of self-reflection will help you to build your self-belief. And if you find you can't do it on your own, then get help from, you know, people like Georgie or like me, or a really good friend who believes in you.
Solid advice, Jane. Thank you so much. Where can I send people to find out more about you, grab your book, and and hopefully sort of access your coaching program? So where can I send them, Jane?
Just to janejacksoncoach.com, or else you can Google me, Jane Jackson Career Coach. You'll find me. I tend to pop up all over the place. And LinkedIn is a really good place. Reach out and connect with me on LinkedIn. I have my Your Career newsletter, as well as the Your Career podcast with Jane Jackson. And you can listen to any of the advice and interviews. And actually, Georgie, I should have you on my podcast too. There you go. I think we've got plenty to share.
We have. Let's make it happen. Jane, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for inviting me.